Hello and welcome to the Success Showcase. I'm your host, Eric Lopkin from the Modern Observer Group. And with me as always is Chip Januszewski from the Happiness and Success GPS. How are you doing this week, Chip?
Doing great. Eric, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Mark so far.
March has been brutal for the Northeast. We're looking at our third nor'easter in as many weeks. So it's been pretty brutal here. We're looking at total of several feet of snow in some areas over the few nor'easters we've had.
Yeah, I've actually escaped a little bit here in Avon, but I know that you got more down there than I got here, and repairing your gutter, shoveling snow, doing all kinds of fun stuff. But the nice thing about March is spring's only a week and a half away, and it's supposed to warm up, so...
Exactly. Every time they start talking about nor'easter, I close my eyes and I go, opening day is only a few weeks away.
This is true.
You know, it's
play ball.
That's it. I'm just focusing on baseball's coming. You know, it's so today we're going to be talking about decision making. And so many people, when something happens, they have the instinct that they have to do something immediately. Something has to be done right now. You see it in businesses all the time. A crisis hits and, okay, who can we lay off? Who can we fire for this? You see it in politics. Something happens. Oh, we've got to pass legislation immediately. But acting immediately doesn't necessarily get you the results you want. So we're going to be looking at the decision-making process and how acting quickly isn't necessarily in your best interest. And, you know, we've seen it over the past... well, several years, actually, every time there's a mass shooting, there's this big push. We got to pass a law, we got to pass a law, we got to pass a law. And as we've seen, nothing's really happened. So that push to get something done immediately clearly isn't working. So how can you pull yourself back from a crisis, figure out what it is you should be doing, and then take action?
Yeah, and this applies a lot in the workplace too. The bottom line is if you're working with a team of people and so on and so forth, sometimes there's two ways to do things from a management standpoint. It's just do it my way. Or it's let's sit down and collaborate on this, which helps employees learn a little bit more about what they're doing and have a bigger part of what's going on. And, you know, when it comes to these things that we're talking about, it's very, very important to do that. There is a different approach for everything. And sometimes it's just best to, as we talk about, be mindful for a few minutes and figure out what to do that way. So quick isn't always the best way to go.
All right. And collaboration is really important for this, because we all have our gut feeling. And you can get a lot of good information from your gut feeling. I don't want to discount that. But when you're looking at a problem that's just happened, a crisis that's going on, your gut feeling has the ability to lock you into a course of action. And you need to collaborate with other people who may have other gut reactions and other information so that you can break out of that single-minded course and evaluate what's going on to figure out how to deal with it best. And collaboration is so valuable for that, as is having a diversity of ideas. Having people looking at the situation from different points of view, coming together and finding ways to make those different points of view fit together.
Yeah, in organizations, it's called creating consensus. And the bottom line is, when a leader sits down with his team and has a conversation about things, as opposed to forcing a buy-in to his new great idea, it gives people a chance to have their input on the new initiatives. You're going to get some better ideas out of that. You're going to have people focusing on the same thing in the same way, as opposed to having a lot of different things come in. And basically what that's going to do is it's going to synchronize your crew. You're going to synchronize ideas. You're going to have people working as a team. And the bottom line is, you know, the math when it comes to masterminding, whatever, 1 + 1 = 3 and 2 + 2 = 9. When you get a whole bunch of ideas, people working together on the same problem, magic happens. So creating consensus in an organization is a big benefit of just taking a little time to get everybody involved. Whereas if your idea may be great, and if you do it, it may be good for the company today, but down the road, are you going to have better employees for it? Did you make the right decision? It's really, really important to consider that.
Right. And dealing with consensus does bring its own problems in. Because when you're doing this, you need to make sure that everybody is pushing forward to make this the best solution possible. We've all heard the term design by committee. And what ends up coming out is a watered down version of what should have been. It's important that everybody contributes, but not water the idea down. You've got to put your best foot forward and put all of those best ideas together rather than figuring out some wishy-washy sort of, well, this could help that and that could do this.
Yeah, you definitely have to have the positive approach to that, where you want to get something done as opposed to just having like a lunchtime conversation. I mean, you really, really need good input from everybody in the organization. But the bottom line is, when you are trying to tackle a problem, the first thing that's most important to do is to just understand what everybody's thinking about that. So you have to listen. And that's a really, really good activity to do. But making sure that you have your meeting formatted so that you're coming out with specific goals and so on and so forth, it's really important to do that too.
Absolutely. And one way to do this, before getting everybody's opinion, before figuring out what's going to be done, is you have to look at what actually happened. When dealing with a problem, usually there's one overwhelming cause that's obvious. But that doesn't mean that that's the root cause, or that it's the only cause. And it's really important to analyze what happened. And we've talked about this tool before, but it's called the 5 Whys. And it's digging down deep. Why did this happen? And why did that happen? And just asking why 5 times. To dig down deep to find the root cause. If you don't find the root cause, you can't address it. It's very easy to grab a superficial answer as to what went wrong, fix the superficial thing, and then when it goes wrong again, you go, well, that didn't work. What can we try now? Unless you get down to that root cause, nothing you do is really going to solve that problem or keep it from happening again, because you haven't identified what the problem is.
Yeah, and again, identifying what the problem is takes a little bit of time. So, I mean, that's the message here, is certain things take time rather than reacting so quickly. One article that I read is by an author named Frank Partnoy, who's the author of Wait, The Art of Science and Delay. He references one example of planning ahead of time instead of just going and reacting. And that's Olympic swimmer, 14-time gold medalist Michael Phelps reviews every possible scenario that could ever occur during a race before he even gets to water. He has swum that over and over and over again instead of just waking up in the morning and saying, okay, I feel good, heading to the pool and hoping that he wins. And then another classic example of somebody pausing for a minute with the crisis in his face was Captain Sully Sullenberger, who was the one who landed that plane in the Hudson River as opposed to trying to make an emergency landing on land. And he saved a whole bunch of lives by being a little bit patient, reacting in a way that a lot of people wouldn't have done. And, you know, those are two extreme examples, especially the last one. But what he came up with, he talks about a process that was developed by military strategist John Boyd. And the acronym is OODA, O-O-D-A, which stands for Observe, Orient, Decide, and Act. And it's a tactic that's meant to have a person momentarily remove himself from the situation, place himself in a position where he can then decide what action to take, and then finally take the necessary steps to ensure a positive outcome. So he said, the ultimate goal of OODA is to act fast, but not necessarily first. And if you think about it in business and in life, if you act fast, but you are not necessarily first, sometimes you come out, a lot of times you come out ahead, because you're minimizing the time it takes to decide and act, but you are still spending a little bit of time observing and orienting yourself before you do. So I found that to be very interesting. OODA, observe, orient, decide, and act.
And Sully Sullenberger is actually a fantastic example, because you're talking about a situation where he still needed to pull himself back. He still needed to analyze the situation. And yet he literally did not have more than a few seconds. This was a situation that had to be reacted to quickly. And yet he still managed to pull back, analyze the situation, take a look, and decide on the best course of action. And that it just goes to show that a delay, I mean, we've come to believe the word delay means, oh, it's going to take forever. We're putting it off. His delay was seconds, maybe. And he was still able to deal with the ongoing situation very quickly. Yes. So the act of pulling back and doing that analysis and actually looking doesn't have to take a lot of time. But the effort has to be put in there to make sure you're following through with the right course of action.
Yeah, and that's exactly what he did. You know, water is a whole lot softer than land if you crash. And what he had to do was just figure out, how am I going to land this in the river and do that, contacting everybody so that there's a rescue team getting there and so on. But it was just brilliant what he did. And it's just stepping outside and analyzing the situation instead of just automatically saying, where am I going to land? Where am I going to land?
And it also has a lot to do with preparation. Sullenberger has said on many occasions that pilots are trained to do water landings. Most would prefer not to, obviously. But it's something that they're trained for, something they've prepared for. So he had that option for him to do when the crisis hit. He was able to go, oh, I'm not going to make it back to an airport. What's available that I can land on? And he was able to say, oh, well, I'll land on the Hudson River, because he was trained to do water landings. Now imagine had he not been prepared for that. Did not have the ability to do a water landing. Well, that means he's going to crash into the land somewhere, possibly they could survive the crash, but you're talking about taking out parts of land, finding some place that's actually wide enough for a 747 to land, without having the ability to do this, his options would have been severely limited.
Yeah, especially where he was, because obviously when you're in the Metro New York area, there's not much land to land on. And his option was to go all the way down to Teterboro Airport down in New Jersey, which is the closest one. And if he hadn't made it there, it would have been a disaster, not only for the plane, but whatever area he landed in.
Right. So preparation has a lot to do with being able to analyze a problem and handle it properly. And, you know, last week we talked about lessons from Lake Placid. The U.S. Olympic team from 1980 prepared over and over and over for what they knew the Russian team would do.
When you're also talking about, they came from competitive teams where they played each other and they were actually enemies on ice before they got together, right. And they somehow pulled together and built a spirit of collaboration and brotherhood, and that carried them through.
Absolutely. So it's really important that you utilize all the resources you have. Imagine all sorts of scenarios that could happen. Imagine scenarios that you don't believe can happen, and prepare for them, and prepare over and over and over, so that when the problem does happen, you can step back, apply your preparations, look at the problem, and determine a course of action without panicking, without rushing into something just for the sake of doing something, and figuring out not just how to solve the problem, but how to keep it from happening again.
Yeah, and to put a different spin on this in the business world, obviously in businesses, what you're looking to do is come up with new products and new ideas and so on and so forth. And a lot of times businesses jump the gun, sending them out there just to try and get a big buzz, and it comes back to slap them in the face. And it's happened to big companies like Apple when they came out with their map app to compete with Google Maps and so on and so forth. If they didn't test the technology and the thing bombed on them, unfortunately, they are big enough so that they could handle that kind of stuff. But a lot of times what you need to do is test products and so on and so forth to make sure that they're working properly, even if you're not going to get them out when you want to get them out. Because, I mean, these days, everybody's expecting something new all the time, especially from companies like Apple. But sometimes you just got to assess things a little bit better and make sure that they're out there, instead of sending something out to the market and then having to fix all the bugs afterwards, or hoping that the consumers can fix the bugs themselves.
All right. And sometimes when you're rushing something out, results can be catastrophic. I mean, the Maps app is a good example, but realistically, if it gives you the wrong directions, okay, you get lost. When Samsung rushed out one of their Galaxy phones, they started to explode because they hadn't properly tested the battery with the processor. You know, these are things, who thought, oh, the phone is going to use enough processing power that it could overload the battery and explode? I mean, that's something that you wouldn't naturally think would happen, but it's something that the company needed to prepare for. And when they rushed out the phone, they didn't. And yeah, by the same token, when you're rushing things out, the first mover advantage is highly overrated. And I always use as an example AltaVista and Netscape. If you remember, Netscape Navigator was the first graphic browser, and it's gone. It did not survive. AltaVista was one of the first search engines, did not survive.
Yep, and I had totally forgotten about them until you just mentioned them. Remember.
That's it. So, I mean, being first is not necessarily being best. And Apple is also a good example of this. Apple gets a lot of criticism because when they roll out new features in the phone, or sometimes in their computer operating system also, people go, oh, Android did that last year, or Linux did that 2 years ago, or whatever. But Apple actually takes the time to make it function the way the end user needs it to function. So they may not be the first to market with their phone being able to do something, but they take the time to make sure it integrates. In fact, I had a conversation with an IT guy who said, you know, he absolutely hated Apple phones because he wants to get inside the machine and code it the way he wants to and, you know, play with it. And you really can't do that with an Apple phone. And then he said, and what really annoys him is that when he wants to get something done, he's got to use the Apple product because the Apple's the one that works all the time.
That does help.
Yes. You know, so.
So
again, rushing in, not necessarily the best way.
Right. And then another thing to keep in mind, too, is that services and products and so on and so forth, some of them have to be quick hits and some of them you have to be a little bit patient with, especially when you know that it's good. And, you know, a great analogy here in an article that I read is obviously if you're coming out with a new movie, you want to have a movie that's going to be a hit very, very quickly, because if it's not, things are going to be bad. However, most products are not like movies. There might be a little bit of initial buzz, and if things slow down, then that's not necessarily an indication of the long-term viability of the project. So what you need to do is, if your project is serving a need that's out there and it's a great, great resource for that, you can't give up right away. You have to persevere, even if the initial reception is cooler than you're hoping for. So, this would include things like printed books and automobiles and PCs and cell phones and so on and so forth. They weren't big hits in the first week of their release. However, look where we are right now. I can think of the fax machine. I can't believe that thing came. I thought it was really funny just to send pictures on toilet paper back and forth to my cousins out in Wisconsin in the 80s, you know, on this new machine. However, but I said, this is useless. And look, you know, now everything is electronic and so on and so forth. But that really was something that got the whole ball rolling, a brand new way of communication. So it's really important to be patient in a lot of instances.
Absolutely. And sometimes something's ahead of its time. You need to give it the time to find its niche. And using movies and television shows as an example, The Wizard of Oz bombed at the box office. It didn't become a hit until it started airing once a year on television. And now it's considered a classic. It's made a fortune on DVD, home video, on TV. And yet, when it first came out, nothing.
Yep, and I remember so well when it did, because that was my favorite movie. And every year I was looking forward to that. And I always said, I wish there was a way I could watch this anytime I wanted. And then you have the VCRs coming out and the DVDs and now on demand and so on and so forth. And it's right there. Unfortunately, when I first became a dad in the 80s, all this stuff was just hitting. So I got to revisit my childhood again by watching all these old Disney movies with my kids. It was great.
All right. And certain things need certain environments. There was a TV show called 24 that season one consisted of 24 hour-long episodes, and the entire season was one day in real time. It was a fantastic show, fantastic concept. The problem is that if you missed an episode, you were lost. That was it. And those 24 weeks aired over the course of an entire season. So there were 3 weeks between episodes. Then there'd be two episodes, and another 2 weeks would go between episodes. So it was very difficult to follow. However, Fox had the idea the day after the final episode aired of season one, they released the entire season on DVD. And DVD sales did so well that the show went on for seven more seasons.
Yep. I was one of the people who was hooked back then, for sure. That was date night with my wife and myself watching Jack Bauer blow people up and save the world.
Yes. But it would not have gone past season one had it not been for the jump to DVD.
Yeah, and also those were more of the early days of DVR also, which was one way to be able to do that, because then you were just able to tape them and watch them whenever. I know it's totally changed a lot of people's viewing habits, and including yours truly. It's easier to tape something now and then just watch it when you want to, take the commercials out and so on and so forth. So it's amazing.
Yeah, so, I mean, all of this goes to show that making that quick decision, you know, if Fox had made the quick decision to cancel the show, they would have lost out on hundreds of millions of dollars in profits. You have to take the time, and sometimes things have to be given the time to grow into what they need to be. You know, we've talked a lot about Apple. Remember, the first Apple iPhones, there was no app store. The only way you could run a program on it was through a web browser. And it was not a big hit because of that. It wasn't until the second version that they came out with the app store and it became what it is today. So you need to let things take the time that they need to mature and figure out exactly what problem is being solved and how to do it. So Chip, we're just about at the end of our time for this week. What do you think is the big takeaway for our listeners?
I like the OODA formula, the observe, orient, decide, and act. It's not necessarily going to make you slow, but it's not necessarily going to make you first, but it is successful.
Yeah, I really like that formula. I think the big takeaway really is take the time to do it right. And something else to remember that we didn't really get into is a lot of times when you don't do it right, you have to do it again. So it's better to take the time to do it right the first time, solve the problem, and not worry about it going forward.
So true.
You've been listening to The Success Showcase. You can catch us every week at blogtalkradio.com/successshowcase. We're also available on the iTunes Store, the Apple Podcasts app, and wherever you find podcasts. Remember, make this your best week ever, and make next week even better. See you then.